for producing different crops. There is a public area called the Fruit and Spice Park, where we have a huge selection and a huge variety of fruits and vegetables and different crops. And the success of this public place has to do with this man that we have right here, Chris Rawlings. And Chris is the park naturalist, and he is the one that has introduced many different plant species to the park and to Florida in general. And if you go to your grocery store, you will see fruits and vegetables that you are not familiar with. Well, guess what? This is the guy that knows all about them, because he has introduced most of them to Florida. So this morning, Chris will be talking to us about his place down there in the Miami area, in the Redland. And he will be telling us everything about these fruits and vegetables. And here is the mic. It's all yours. So welcome to the stage, and thank you for being here.
It's a pleasure to be here. Well, the Miami-Dade County Fruit and Spice Park was begun in 1944. We grow 500 different kinds of edible tropical fruit from all over the world. And as we go through this morning, we're going to look at some of the ones that are ripe, just ripe today. Of course, with 500 different kinds of fruit, they don't all ripen on the same day. I wish they would just once, but they don't. But I do have quite a bit here, and this is what's recovered from last summer's endless hurricanes, but we're doing good. So we're going to go through and talk about them, but bear in mind that many of these fruits are really important everyday food in some parts of the world. You know, they may look bizarre and weird and like novelty items, but they're really important. And let's start off with what is ultimately the biggest one. And many of these fruits have become crops where I live in Florida because we have an ultra-tropical climate. It's not purely tropical, but it's as close as we can come on the mainland of the United States. So we have farms that grow lychees, limes, papayas, mangoes, avocados, a passion fruit, and mamey, a Cuban fruit we'll see in a minute. Oh, thanks. And this is one of the ones that's become a crop. Something happened to Americans a few years back. Prior to the 1960s, with the arrival of the kiwi, which was the first new fruit Americans embraced since the days of the clipper ship when the banana arrived. And that was a long time back. And from that time until the 1960s, Americans wanted apples, plums, pears, peaches, grapes, meat, and potatoes. And if it didn't come on the Mayflower, they didn't want to know about it. Well, that's not the case now. And it was an odd thing. When I first started at the park, people would come in and they'd see this, and they'd go, "Ooh, I don't want to eat that." In the 1980s, a strange thing happened. And I have my own theory, and it is that a convergence of three factors: returning veterans from Southeast Asia, immigration from around the tropical world, and the emergence of affluence and yuppiedom and the quest for things that were new and special, just like the yuppies were themselves. And all of a sudden, fruits that we couldn't give away, we couldn't grow fast enough. The star fruit was a great example. In about 1982, you couldn't give away star fruits. There were 5 acres, and I asked the leading fruit packer in Homestead if he ever sold them, and he said, "I'm in this business to make money. I don't grow that junk, you know." 3 years later, his most highly paid executives were driving their trucks up and down every little side street in Homestead looking for any single tree they could find so they could buy every fruit on the tree. And he didn't change. He still only cared about money, but they were getting $6 and $7 a pound, which is maybe 2 fruits, so wholesale. So all of a sudden, tropical fruits became very popular, and then people like Martha and cooking shows and magazines all picked up on it. Florida Nouveau Cuisine started using many of these fruits, and they're much better known now. This is something new in America. This is one of my favorites. There's an old advertising slogan: if you can't do it right, do it big. Well, this is big. This is a baby here. This is a runt. This is the biggest cultivated tree fruit in the world. Oh, I go like Madonna.
Okay. No mustache interference? Okay. See, my daughter should see me now like Madonna, you know. So those fruit guys are really cool. Okay, so this is the jackfruit. And this is the biggest cultivated tree fruit in the world. It weighs, in Southeast Asia, where they're their happiest, up to 70 pounds per fruit, which would mean, imagine a watermelon this big wrapped in alligator skin. Inside, when it's ripe, it's soft and sweet and chewy. And I'm not kidding here. It tastes like banana, cantaloupe, and juicy fruit chewing gum mixed together. It's delicious. These sell for $2 a pound in Miami, and they'll line up. It's an Asian fruit, so it's mostly the Asian population will line up at your gate to buy them. They want to buy them before they're even ripe on the tree. They'll say, I'll buy every fruit on the tree. I don't ever sell fruit at my grove because I can't stand the aggravation of people bothering me about it. But, matter of fact, I often can't afford my own fruit. I'll pick a nice-looking jackfruit, and I'll look at it, and I'll say, well, do I want the $60 or do I want the jackfruit? And I can eat the jackfruit at work, so I eat a few of my own fruit. My wife has a story once. I had an illness in the family, and I had to leave abruptly, and the banks were closed, and I left her with $20 and a jackfruit. You know, so she had to go down and sell a jackfruit. So, but she had plenty of money after that. But anyway, so this thing is really an unusual fruit, but it's not a novelty. In Southeast Asia, they eat this every day. Tens of millions of people eat this every single day. Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia, Thailand, Pakistan, India, Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Malaysia, every day. They cook it green as a vegetable, or they eat it ripe, and I like it ripe. But okay, well, that's just one of the weirdos. Let's look. Now, a lot of these things, we grow things that you do know. I think everybody could recognize a pineapple. It's funny, I get a kick out of our table because people will start looking and they don't know anything, and they come to something like an eggplant, and they're afraid to say that it might be an eggplant. They're so confused by that point. But this is a pineapple, of course. Pineapple is an important fruit in the world, and it's got a heck of a history. When the Spaniards came over in the very first Columbus voyages, they didn't have any botanists with them. The only guys who could read were the priests, and they didn't really know much about plants. And this looked like a pine cone, so it became a pine, and it was big and round, so it became a pineapple. Well, I don't know if any of you have ever had a truly ripe pineapple. When you buy them from the grocery store, you know your tongue turns inside out, and it starts to itch, and things go wrong. Well, a ripe pineapple is like the sweetest honey you could ever have. It's the best candy you've ever had. Well, they took that back to Europe, where they didn't even have regular supply of sugar. And people went out of their minds. And, you know, you think of, when we look at antiques and things, we think of traditions and things. Well, pineapple hit Europe at 1500, and everybody went berserk. They started immediately carving it into their walls and into what we now call antique furniture. You're on tops of garden gates and posts. It became a symbol of hospitality and wealth because it just was the rage. People really were crazy about it. So pineapple ripe is a fruit that you may not have had. And if you get a chance to grow your own, don't pick it when it looks like a grocery store pineapple, because that means it's not ripe. I had a big fight with a guy from Dole one time. We were in the smallest Dole pineapple patch they had. I went to visit. It was 6,000 acres of pineapple without interruption. And I finally said, all right, wise guy, how do I know when I've got a good pineapple? Because he was trying to tell me that the green unripe ones were ripe. And he finally said, well, you hold it up like this and you turn it, and when you see a little sign that says Dole, you buy it. So I realized I wasn't going to get very far with him. Coconuts are well known, and you know, most coconuts in the world are eaten at this stage. They take a machete and they whack across the top, and if they have a straw, they use it otherwise. It's one of these things. But inside this coconut, there's no white hard meat like you get on a brown mature coconut. It's jelly-like, and they call it spoon meat. And what they do is they whack the top off with a machete, and then they take the machete and they skin a little chip, like a big potato chip, off the side. They drink the juice out, they set it down and whack it open, split it in half with a machete, and they take that chip to scoop out all the spoon meat inside. And this is done, again, by millions of people every day. No matter where you travel in the tropical world, no matter how funky things are, the inside of this coconut is sterile and clean and safe to drink or eat. It doesn't really taste quite like mature coconut. It has a faint coconut flavor. It's a different flavor. It's kind of watery. But people who grew up, or after you try it a few times, it really is very pleasant and refreshing and very nutritious. Pineapple, coconuts? Well, you pull a coconut off, depending on when you use it. If you want to drink it as coconut water, Cubans in Miami sell this a lot, and they call it coco frio, which means cold coconut. Well, I don't let my staff use machetes. If you look at a lot of those old Cuban guys, they kind of count, like they've got fingers missing, and they're up there, and they're still up there holding it, you know, with four fingers, three fingers, tips of fingers missing, still wet. So when my staff does coco frio, I get them an electric drill, and we set it on the table, and we drill a hole and put the straw through. It's a lot less painful, ultimately. Well, now, the old coconuts we used to grow in Florida would fall off when they were ready. This is a Malayan coconut that's resistant to a disease called lethal yellowing, and you actually have to wait. The moment it turns completely brown, then you can cut it off and propagate it. Okay, this is a kind of a compelling fruit called a Rollinia. And the Rollinia is from tropical America, and it's a group of plants. The whole group are referred to as custard apples, and that's a good name because all of them are like a white, creamy, smooth vanilla custard inside. They're really that good. And this is one that you could see this growing in the jungle or by the side of the road in a ditch. But it's a tropical American fruit, native only to the American tropics. Now it's been carried around the world. Tear it apart and eat it. You sometimes people use them on ice cream, but there's not much you can do to improve it. I feel that way about a mango. We grow 500 kinds of fruit in South Florida, and when people ask me what my top 10 are, 1 through 10 is mango, 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 mango. And I'm not just kidding. I like mangoes. A ripe mango is the equal to or better than the best succulent peach you ever dreamed about. It is exquisite. And we have 140 different varieties of mango, from this big to this big, green, red, orange, purple, yellow, all different colors, different textures, different aromas. When you come to the Fruit and Spice Park in the summer, it's really funny because people are going up and down our mango trees, picking them off the ground and smelling them and tearing them apart. And when we have a mango workshop where we usually eat about 50 different varieties, and they call mango the bathtub fruit because it's very juicy. And usually everybody has juice dripping off of both elbows by the end of our workshop. And I call it a workshop. We just go there and mostly eat mangoes. So this is a mango that is a grocery store mango, and it isn't a good mango. And this is very disappointing because mangoes are really spectacular fruit. You know, and around the world, it's one of the most widely consumed fruits in the world. But unfortunately, to import mangoes into the United States, they have to be fumigated. Years ago, we used to use methyl bromide, which is a really toxic gas. And it was so good because it killed everything in the fruit, and the shelf life was 3 times longer, and it didn't affect the flavor. So obviously, methyl bromide that I ate for 50 years probably wasn't good. But on the other hand, the mangoes we get now are sterilized by dipping them in scalding water hot enough to kill a bug anywhere inside the fruit. And when that happens, all of the essential volatile oils and flavors go right off with the steam. So when you go to the grocery store and you buy a mango, it's just like a potato wrapped in a mango skin. If you have a chance, when you're in some part of Florida that grows mangoes in the summertime and you see some kid selling mangoes by the side of the road, that's the time to stop and buy some mangoes and try them. Well, it has some vitamin C and carotene, and beyond that, and sugar. Beyond that, I don't know. Yes, ma'am. No, if it's a Florida-grown mango, it hasn't been fumigated. Pardon me? Well, most grocery store mangoes are imported. It only rarely is there a little window in the summer where you might get a Florida-grown mango. So, yes. that are never ripe? Well, there are some mangoes that have the skin is green even when you eat them. And some people eat mangoes when they're green and not ripe, too. Okay. Well, this is, you know, they mentioned that I bring fruit into the country, and I lead botanical tours, and I prefer to go to Southeast Asia and Central America. And this is one we got in North Vietnam a couple of years ago, and this turns, in another week or two, this will be fire engine red, bright red. This is called GAC, G-A-C, and it's known in North Vietnam. And they use it, inside it has a couple of dozen old-fashioned silver dollar-sized seeds wrapped in dark red goo. And that's used to make rice orange. And I've asked many Vietnamese why they want orange rice, and I guess if you eat enough rice, orange rice is a treat. But they do it anyway. And this is a tradition there with this obscure squash. It's on a vine. And 20 years ago, they started importing little bottles of cheap red food dye, and some places quit growing GAC. And a year later, the medical authorities noticed vitamin A deficiencies in children in those areas, and they traced it back to lack of GAC. So this obscure little weirdo thing that nobody thought did much, it did have, it not only had a cultural role, but it had a nutritional role that nobody would have guessed about. Pardon me? A very faint flavor, not significant. Very often they color rice they're going to be making temple offerings with to make it look snazzier to whoever they're praying to. The slimy stuff is what does the coloring. They do eat the seed as a vegetable, too. This is another fruit of great cultural significance. This is a fruit that when I was a little boy in downtown Miami in the 60s, this fruit sold for $9 a pound. And again, people lined up around the block when they were available. And the guy that sold them cut the fruit and took the seed out every time he sold it. This is a Mamay sapote. And when they started growing groves of this in Miami, all of a sudden our farms were like the Wild Wild West. People were coming out and stealing these fruits because the unit cost was so high that they could come in and run over a gate, bring their truck into someone else's farm, and pick $20,000 worth of fruit in one night and drive away. And they did. My friend had a grove, and one night he'd gotten all worked up about this, and one night he heard someone in his grove, and he ran out, and he fired his gun in the air, and then six more shots came back. You know, so that's Miami. He changed his philosophy instantly. This is Mamay, Mamay Colorado, Mamay Sapote, or just Sapote. Now, there's a lot of fruits called Sapote, and what they have in common is that they're all sweet, soft fruits from Central America. And, you know, we get a lot of great arguments at the park, and I love listening to them, because there'll be like a guy from Colombia here and a guy from Cuba there. And Colombians have their own sapote that isn't this. This is the Cuban sapote. And, you know, they'll go around, well, no, mine's the real one, you know. And then one guy will leave, and then the other guy will come over and say, you know, he's really a jerk. This is the real sapote. And then the other guy will come back and say the same thing. The common names are very frustrating, but this is a Mamay sapote. It makes great ice cream and milkshakes. And when we're done here, if you come over to the table, we'll taste it as far as we can go on this till it's gone. That's my only ripe one. Okay, this is a Mexican fruit, a vegetable rather, called a nopalito. And this is one you can discover in your grocery store. You know, I mentioned food is changing in our grocery stores. And with the tremendous increase in Hispanic population, we see more and more. You don't just have to go to a Mexican grocery. Now you can find this food mainstream. And this is a vegetable. It tastes like okra and asparagus mixed. You'll find it sliced into little jars in glass bottles on the shelf in most groceries in Florida. Nopalitos. And this is a great, if you like nopalitos, and you just have to try them, they're nice. But you have to acquire the taste, try it a few times. But what's nice is if you want to grow this in your yard, you don't ever have to spray it, you don't have to fertilize it, and there's a special way of planting it. That's it. Walk away and don't touch it, and it will sprout, and you'll have nopalitos before you know it. Now, another grocery store fruit that you may have noticed is chayote, which is a little green pear-shaped squash, and it's a single-seeded squash. And the vine will actually last 15 years. In the summer, the vine grows almost 6 inches a day, and those tender growing tips make very nice greens and vegetables. The big tuber that grows and forms after a few years under the fruit is also a very good edible starchy tuber. But the chayote squash, it has a big green seed in it that you eat along with the rest of the squash, even though it's a big one. This one is armored. This is one right out of the jungle, which is protected from animals by these unpleasant thorns. And I'm very fond of this kind because people don't steal them. If you put this in your pocket, you really will be very sorry. So we have a lot of fruit stealing incidents at the park. You know, ever since Adam and Eve, we've had problems with fruit and what we could take and what we couldn't. And some of these fruits are so compelling to culturally to people that it brings out the darker element of their nature at times. And we've had jackfruits. There's a lot of different philosophies at the park to stealing jackfruit. We've had the fullbacks who tuck one under their arm, the young guys, and just run through the store, and I'm not going to tackle them, so they, you know. Other people try to throw them over the fence, and my favorite one with that is we had a little lady who was like this tall and couldn't have weighed 70 pounds. She had a 30-pound jackfruit, and she was doing the old basketball thing, trying to throw it over an 8-foot-high chain-link fence, which wasn't going to happen. And I actually, the whole staff came out to watch, and we were going to give it to her if she could get it over the fence, but we had to stop her because it looked like she was going to hurt herself. And then we often find them in baby strollers with little blankets pulled over them as they go out the exit. And so if the baby's being carried and there's a bulge in the stroller, you know, something's wrong. So we do have odd incidents. But Mame Sapote was also a popular fruit for theft. But now that's all leveled off a little bit. This is a fruit that you've all eaten, but you may not know it. This is tamarind, tamarindo. And tamarind is actually an Indian fruit. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's an African fruit, really. They used to think it was from India. You just crush it when it's ready, and you get this pulp inside. And this pulp is tangy. There are some sweet varieties, but the tangy ones I like better, really. And this is the key ingredient in Worcestershire sauce. And it's a great marinade. If you're lucky enough to have tamarind or a tree or buy fresh fruits, you rub it right into the skin of chicken or beef, and it's a wonderful marinade. It also makes a very refreshing drink, like limeade, with sour tamarind pulp and sugar and ice and water. And if you don't put too much sugar in, it's very, very refreshing. Tamarind nectar is sold in a lot of grocery stores, but unfortunately, nectar means it's a syrup. And you really lose a lot of the flavor when you do that. That's very popular in tropical America, is the syrup. Yes, it does. Uh-huh. Okay, now, I need a volunteer to go. Would you want to carry fruit around and let people take tomatoes? Let everybody take a few tomatoes. Okay, she's going to what's her name?
Clarice.
Clarice is going to serve you the wild Everglades tomato. Now, tomatoes didn't come from the Everglades. They came from South America. But this is one that has naturalized. It's not really an aggressive weed, but it turns up in hedgerows and backyards. And what's nice about this little tomato, do you ever go to Wendy's in the salad bar and you get these supposedly cherry tomatoes and they're this big? If you pop it in your mouth, it's going to squirt out your ears, and you can't cut it, chase it around your salad. These are just nice and bite-sized. But They're very sweet, and tomato breeders use this species of tomato, which is different from the normal one. This is Lipersicum pimpifolia. They use this to breed disease resistance and sugar content into regular cherry tomato hybrids that you buy in seed packs. But this one is actually all on its own is very sweet, very nice. Now, we've chilled these, which is not very conducive to maintaining the flavor on a tomato. Normally, chilling destroys the flavor. So you'll have to bear with us. There was no way I could get this up here in my truck if we didn't chill it, so we had to do it. But try these, and if you want, take an extra tomato, squash the seeds out on a paper towel or a piece of wax paper and let them dry, pick the seeds out and plant them. After you have this growing, the birds will plant them all over your yard, and if they're in the way, you pull them out. But again, they'll fruit most of the summer, almost all year long. They're very disease resistant. They're very sweet. You don't have to worry about them. Well, we call them the Everglades tomato, and that's in Homestead, that's kind of what it's known as. Yeah, but it spreads. It won't stay in a pot. It's going to go sprawling all over. You could plant it in one. It just won't stay there. Pardon me? No, not really. I mean, you could, like a tomato ring, make it, but it doesn't vine like a vine. I don't think I did this one yet. Now, this is a relative of the star fruit. Now, the star fruit, as I was saying earlier, has been in Florida for 110 years, and usually the first ones we got were so sour, they had so much oxalic acid, that people used to slice them and rub them on brassware to clean the tarnish off. So they weren't real fun to eat. However, when you cook those sour ones, the oxalic acid breaks down and disappears, and they taste just like quince. So if you have a source of either unripe or sour carambolas, slice them like a fried green tomato, and they're surprisingly good. They change their flavor completely. This is a relative of the star fruit or carambola without the wings on it, and it looks like a pickle, and that's what they use it for. In Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand, they make a burning hot pickle. Burning hot. They pickle it in brine, and they have so much chili in there that literally it's just terribly painful for most of us. But it's immensely popular there. You'll see these in the market all through Southeast Asia, and as you will these. These are both the same kind of fruit, they're different varieties, called wax jambu. In Southeast Asia, they have a lot of rules about food. You know, yin and yang. If you eat this, then you should eat that, and then if you're eating a big meal, you should have hot tea to make it digest better, and they go on and on and on with rules. Well, one of the rules is that there are heating fruits and there are cooling fruits. And if you eat a heating fruit, such as a durian or a champideck, these Asian fruits, you can just stand there in a cool breeze and eat one of these fruits, and you're going to start to sweat. It does that to you. This is the antidote. This is a cooling fruit. This is a wax jambu. And think of it as a cucumber. A lot of people, the first time they try this, they're like, what's the big deal? Well, if you had never had a cucumber in your life and somebody said, hey, you got to try this, and you peeled it and ate it, you probably wouldn't really be that enamored of it. And it's the same with this. And a lot of these foods, oh, thank you, sweetie. A lot of these foods, you did a good job. A lot of these foods are that way. If you try it the first time and it just doesn't quite register with you, don't be afraid to just try it again later, a time or two. And many of these grow on you very quickly. It's funny because the people who eat, you know, what we think is just completely weird fruit, when we take them our fruits, I trade plants with scientists in Asia and Central America and everywhere. And when I take the guys in Southeast Asia, the Cuban mame sapote, you know, Cubans will kill for it. Southeast Asians pick it off the ground and try it, and they go, ew, I don't want this. And they won't even steal it. They won't take it. You can't make them take it. And in Miami or anywhere in the Caribbean, they'd go crazy. Uh-oh, did I just do something here? See, I know I wasn't Madonna material. Okay, well, I guess we're almost done, but we'll just go the hard way here. So bear that in mind about jackfruits. Okay. Are we done?
No, you broke it.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, okay. Now move.
What happened?
Okay, well, while we're fixing our technical problem, is there any questions so far? Oh, I'm sorry. Our particular at the beginning, the crushing smell. Did everybody get a look at the crushing smell? Okay, let's pass it around and. Okay, thanks. Try this again. Working? Okay. Okay, here's this tree. Who didn't get a leaf to crush and smell? Okay. Okay, there you go. There you are. No. Here we go. And more. Crush and smell, and I'm going to give you a real ringer of a tip here. This was your grandfather's aftershave. A lot of people smell a lot of things, and this is a close relative of a spice that's called allspice, but it isn't allspice. Whoops. This is bay rum. And bay rum was really the first widely used aftershave. Essentially, bay rum as a commercial product is just alcohol with either a bay leaf or some bay oil in it from the leaf. So, okay, we have loofahs up here. Loofahs are, you all know these, you know, and I always get a kick out of marketing. You know, nowhere is marketing more important than cosmetics. And it's so much, I love it, because in the last few years, botanicals have become a real buzzword with cosmetics. And when you go to Bloomingdale's or some upscale department store, you'll see loofah squashes cut into perfect little squares and bleached, you know, for $9 for a little, you know. And you can grow these. This is probably the easiest squash in the world to grow. You can plant these and grow them on your chain link fence or over your tool shed, and all they do is keep right on going and making more loofahs until you can't stand it. And all you have to do to get more is break open the end, and about 300 seeds fall out the bottom, and you're back in business again. So loofahs really are a great handy item to grow. You can use them as potholders and scrubbers. And I've been in places in Southeast Asia where they used them as filaments in diesel engine oil filters. Instead of changing the cartridge, they jam a bunch of loofah up into it instead. I guess it worked. This is another species of loofah called Chinese okra. And Chinese okra turns green, or it is green, rather. This is a brown one that was allowed to mature for seed. When it's half this size, it does look sort of like a giant okra pod. And it's cooked as an Asian, common Asian vegetable. Now, you probably know that when you go to an Italian restaurant or a Chinese restaurant or a French restaurant, that's not how people in those countries at home eat, or they just die if they had a French restaurant food every day or Italian food every day. Well, Chinese food is that way. And you won't find this in a Chinese or Vietnamese or, well, not very often. Very, very seldom. If you follow the chef home and look in his refrigerator, he'll have it there, because that's what people from that part of the world really eat. Sometimes it's called star squash, and it actually does get a sponge. If you let it get old like this, it's just like a regular loofah. Let's see. Okay, here's an interesting one here. This is... It's kind of an unsavory story, but it's part of medical history. Lignin vitae, often referred to as the tree of life. In 1492, Columbus came to the Caribbean for the first time, and he brought back pineapples and passion fruits and all kinds of weird stuff. And for about 200 years, it was widely held among medical historians and medical authorities that he also brought back syphilis. Prior to 1497, 98, there was never a recorded case of syphilis in Europe, ever. Never happened. And you can look at bones of people who have that disease, and the bones are pitted, and you can tell, centuries old, if the person that had those bones had that affliction. Well, actually, this was a huge epidemic at this time. They even had to call off a war one time because of syphilis, mostly. Well, they looked for a cure. They immediately blamed Columbus because it appeared right after he got back. It was very suspicious. Well, only recently, in the last few decades, medical historians have discovered it was really an African disease called MAWS, M-A-W-S, that was brought up coincidentally, and Columbus didn't have anything to do with it. But because they thought that it came from the Caribbean, they sent people back to look for cures, and one of the cures they came back with was lignin vitae. And lignin vitae decoctions of the chipped up wood were listed in the pharmacology of Europe for well over 100 years as a cure for syphilis. And lignin vitae wood is one of the two or three heaviest, densest woods in the world. A piece of lignin vitae this long and this big around laying on the ground, if you go to pick it up, you think it's glued to the ground. It doesn't come up. It's so heavy. It's a two-handed thing to lift it. They make mallets out of it and so forth. And lignin vitae is native to Florida on the Florida Keys. Lignin vitae State Park, by the way, is a tremendous place where you can see 1,200-year-old lignin vitae trees there. So they thought that this was the cure. And in fact, because this wood is so heavy and it's so full of resins and chemicals and just things that haven't even been analyzed yet. It was so disruptive to people, they thought it was curing them, but it was really just diverting them from one problem to another. But this was a very costly thing, the chips of wood of lignin vitae. Now, of course, we know that's not true. There's a little fruit with little seeds in it, and it's now a highly valued tree as a native in the warmest parts of Florida. The fruit is not edible, no. It's simply a medicinal plant. At the Fruit and Spice Park, we like to have things that people don't, that know they use, but they don't know where it comes from. We have a poisonous plant collection. Well, we grow teak, we grow mahogany, we grow cotton. We have a very large herb garden, a huge herb garden, but herbs don't travel that well, so I usually don't bring them with me because they just turn brown by the time I get where I'm going. So, we don't mess with them that much. Okay, let's see. I don't know if we did these or not yet. These are macadamia nuts. Macadamia nuts are one of the few really good edible plants from Australia. If you stand back and look at Australia for native edible foods, it's not good. You know, the Aborigines had a pretty tough life, and they didn't have a lot to choose from. Macadamia, or the old-fashioned name is Queensland nuts, from northern Australia, where macadamias come from. And macadamias, of course, are very valuable and expensive nuts, and they're very easy to grow in Florida. However, if you have squirrels anywhere near you, you will never, ever get a macadamia nut off your tree. I had a friend who lost his perspective, and he lived in downtown Miami, and he took out 38 squirrels one season, and he still never got a macadamia nut, so he gave up, fortunately. But it is frustrating, but these, they're, when you grow these, they're just like the ones right out of the Manaloa can, except they're in a very hard shell. And you can't use a walnut cracker. No one, even Arnold, couldn't do that. There's a special extra leveraged nutcracker just for macadamia nuts that you find around that they sell a lot in Hawaii. These are a couple of little jungle fruits, and you know these jungle fruits go on forever, and we literally have hundreds of them at the Fruit and Spice Park. And the story on most of them is, well, yes, you can eat them, and then just people stop talking about them at that point because they're those little sweet, sappy fruits, and they just never end. These are a couple of odd ones. They're related to the calabash gourd, and they're kind of interesting in one sense in that they flower and then fruit right out of the bark on the main trunk of the tree, from where the tree comes out of the ground all the way up to the branches. Flowers just pop out of the bark, followed by either this or this fruit. And that's known as a cauliflorous flowering habit, and primarily some tropical trees do it. This is the big showy one, and this is called a Panama candle fruit, and they turn yellow, and they taste just like sugar cane without any sugar in it. So if you like gnawing on stems, you'll really like this. It's very fibrous. And I'm stunned at the park. People come into the park and they kind of get into the swing of it, you know, and they get swept away and they come in and they'll say, I ate a whole candle fruit and it was good. And you're thinking, well, you know, there's so much fiber in here. This is like swallowing a broom. You know, I keep waiting for calls from hospitals or something, but I've never had one. But it's just so odd. these things are unbelievable. But people get excited, or they'll come into our office and they'll say, well, you know, I ate a whole avocado pit. And we'll say, what? Well, who would think to tell them not to eat an avocado pit, you know? Well, we still haven't had the call, you know, from a doctor yet, but we have a lot of school field trips, which these play strongly a role in, and there's always a really nice little boy who wants to take mulberries home to his mom, and he packs them in his pocket, you know? So mulberry season's fun because, you know, we don't really care if people eat mulberries, but normally we don't allow people to pick fruit from the trees. Human nature being what it is, you can imagine that gets out of hand real quick. We our guides pick it and let them try everything. But it's funny, in this time of year, people come in and there's just purple all over their face. And they say, have you had any mulberries? Oh, no. So, anyway. So this is a Panama candle fruit, and I've noticed that among our second graders that it primarily it's good for spontaneous sword fights, and other kids immediately pick it up and hit some other kid with them. But that seems to be, as far as I'm concerned, its main purpose. But it is edible, apparently, along with an avocado seed. This is a fruit related to it. And you know, every now and then I'll be talking and I'll sort of pan or bash a fruit because to me, I just don't see much value. Sooner or later, somebody catches me, you know. And this is one that, this is just like that one. It's like a piece of fiber growing in a fruit skin. It's got just a very small amount of sugar in it and not much flavor. And they stew them and cook them into submission into a pulp in Guatemala and put sugar on them and then they eat them. Well, you know, you could do that with sawdust, you know. But every now and then I'll say, I'll be giving my opinion about this fruit, and somebody from Guatemala will jump up and correct me, and, oh, this is the best thing we have, and it's our national emblem, and, you know, who knew? You wouldn't know by, it's called, this particular one is called guajolote. And it's you know, when you go through the markets of any tropical country, it's a good way to travel, for one thing, and years ago, I got invited to be a guest speaker on a Cunard line. You remember the ship off the coast of Africa that the pirates just tried to take? That was the ship. And I went from Hong Kong to Singapore on that. And we stopped in Saigon and all the little stops on the way. And it was really interesting for me because I don't cruise very often. And this was a particularly expensive ship. It was free for me, but I was way over. I mean, these people were much wealthier than me. And a lot of them were older, and they were all from British Commonwealth countries for some reason. And when I start talking to them about fruit, some of these people had been on this same cruise 5 or 6 times in a row every year, and they'd never gone to the market because they were afraid of the people. You know, and, oh, I can't eat anything unless it comes from the hotel. You know, a fruit, inside a fruit is clean no matter where you are, you know. So it was really fun because I got to corrupt them a little bit. It was great for my ego because we went to the market in Saigon, and normally I just go and I buy the stuff and I, you know. Well, I had 4 guys in white coats behind me and the ship's executive chef and the purser for the steamship in the harbor all come along, and I got to the point where I just go, and they go buy them. You know, so we got back to the ship and we're going to do this fruit display, and they have stewards with the white coats and the silver tongs, you know, and I knew it couldn't last that way, you know, because people, after a while, you can't eat fruit that way. So anyway, we started, and finally these people began to go to the market. And the whole point of this is, if you're traveling, you're a transient. You're not going to get to know people. You're going to, you know, you can go to the tourist shows and see them dance and sing, and you don't know anything about the people. If you go to the market, people in tropical countries around the world, 90% of them still cook on wood, either charcoal or wood fires. And they cook every day. They don't have refrigerators and freezers and Stouffer's meals. They don't know anything about it. Their poor, underdeveloped nations have to eat fresh food every day. No Hershey bars, only fruit. So you go to a market and you will meet people. You will be able to interact with people, which you can't do as a tourist walking down the street. They just want your money. If you go to a stand and you, oh, what is this? Can I eat this? And yeah. So what? Be an idiot. Doesn't matter. They'll show you how to do it, and you'll get to know and have at least a fleeting relationship with people. And you never know what'll turn them on. You know, I, as I said, I lead these tours, and years ago, I had a tour. I was going to Guatemala, where I used to go all the time, and I got on the airplane in Miami, and some of these people that had come with me, these 20 people with me, I know, and some I don't. Well, I happened to sit by one of the guys I didn't know who I was going to spend the next 2.5 weeks with. And he pulled out of his pocket a bunch of balloons, and he started making balloon animals. I'm thinking, I got 2 weeks of balloon animals. I mean, I don't know. It's not really my thing either. But so we got to Guatemala, and we got to the market. And in the market in Guatemala and all of Central America, there's a certain type of, most of the ladies in the market, wear, the older ladies wear black. They sit there like this. And you're agreeing. They don't want to waste their time on you. You know, they know that you're not a part of their life. You're not going to be a part of their life. They wouldn't spit on you if you were on fire. You couldn't make them. You could go up and just dance around in front of them. They're like the guards in front of the Queen's Palace in London. They're not going to budge. Well, so I'm kind of used to that, and I gave up on that. This guy with his balloons came in there, and he just stood in front of them, and he whipped out his balloons. Well, as it turned out, not only did he make balloon animals, but he made anatomically correct nasty balloon animals. He made pregnant dogs and all kinds of things that I can't describe. These old ladies, who I couldn't have beaten a smile out of them, I couldn't have done anything to make, were literally rolling on the ground over these balloon animals. And this guy conquered the people of Guatemala with balloon animals. But he got to the market and he got to interact with people, the only place a tourist really can. So, as a matter of fact, it got to be really strange. Fortunately, everybody was shorter there, and I could grab him by the belt, literally, and I'd have to pull him through the crowd to the bus like this. I'd be flinging balloons. But we'd go to a hotel, and the chef would come out, and he'd have special dishes for us because this guy made him a balloon parrot or something. It was just really funny. So, anyway, my point of all of that was going to the market in any country, but especially tropical countries where people shop every single day, is really revealing. First of all, it's an Easter egg hunt for what kind of weird local fruit, vegetable, spice, medicine, herb, whatever that you might find. But also, you really get to meet people in the only way you possibly can. Okay, well, that about wraps it up. I'll be over here all day. And, yeah. Which? Oh, this I didn't talk about? Oh, well, I'm sorry. It all begins to blend together after a while, but... You know, I could demonstrate frying pans with this. This is a good microphone. I like it. This is Monastera. This is a philodendron. Philodendrons are ornamental plants. Philodendrons are aroids. Aroids are things like Diefenbachia, which is known as dumb cane. And it's called that because if you chomp into a leaf, your throat will swell closed and you won't be able to speak or breathe. But, you know. So this is a generally considered a toxic plant. And this is toxic. As you see it here. But in the fall, little yellow lines appear as these scales start to split apart very slowly. Finally, the scales on the bottom will just fall off. And you can come up and just very lightly pick off about a third of the scales. At that point, you cut it off the plant. It's a vine. And you just take your fork and stick it right in there and pull out a hunk of it. It's like pudding. And it tastes exactly like pineapple and banana pudding, just exactly like it. It's delicious. These fruits sell for $1 a piece on the farms down in the Redland area, and they get shipped to specialty stores all over the place. The problem is we really can't grow enough of them right now. We can't produce them fast enough. Grows on a vine. You've seen this plant. It's a big round leaf with Swiss cheese holes in it. It's a philodendron. And philodendron means hooded flower, and in the spring, this time of year, there's a bit. This is much smaller, and there's a big creamy-colored hood over the top and back of it. It never has to be sprayed. You just grow. Most often in Miami, it's grown as a foundation plant. You know, around the bottom of a house or the bottom of a tree. It'll grow way up a tree. I'm sorry. Oh, Monastera deliciosa, the delicious monster. Yes. No, it doesn't open. These scales on the outside, pardon me? It happens mostly in the fall. Yeah, late summer through the fall. And if the scales don't come off on their own, you cannot eat it. If you pull them off or cut it and try to eat it, you will get literally a chemical burn in your mouth. Yes. Yes, Fruit and Spice Park. Yeah, you're welcome to get our brochures. I have a bunch of them here. We have activities all the time. We have an agricultural fiesta coming up in about 2 weeks where all of the local fruit, mangoes and lychees and stuff, will be in the park and all the farmers. And, you know, I promise you'll come and sweat, but it's worth it. Yes. Most of these fruits cannot freeze. So along the coastline, where it's warmer, near the ocean on the east and west coast, you can grow them up to Melbourne and to Tampa, near where it's warmer. Or in a microclimate like south of Lake Okeechobee is a little warm pocket, and you can grow a lot of things there that you couldn't grow a few miles away from there. So any other questions on anything? We're located south of Miami, about 20 miles, 30 miles. We're open every day but Christmas. We have guided tours throughout the day. And the menu is different almost every day of the year. Yeah. No, well, it has very small amount. It's just very, very fibrous.
Well, that one I have to keep. If anybody, I'm going to be cutting open anything that's ripe tomorrow. I mean, yeah, tomorrow at 4:30 when we get ready to pack up. That's the nice thing about these displays I'm doing over there is when I'm done, I throw them in the trash can, you know, can leave. But there'll be a lot of things for seeds and things you can taste. So now, since we don't have anybody following me, we can taste one of these fruits here. Okay, well, that'll be good. This is a, let's taste this Mame Sapote. Yeah, this is a favorite Cuban fruit. I'm not stereotyping, I'm just telling the truth. Okay, you don't eat the skin.
And the seed is beautiful. We actually use it for crafts and things like that in Cuba.
Well, you know, there's a lot of folk heritage about the seed that's very interesting. This seed, you know, when the mass of Cuban influx came in all at once, they confiscated all these seeds, as they did every seed, not just these, any seed. Well, apparently, the word got around in the first generation Cuban community that these were illegal. And there's a stigma to these seeds to start with, even in Cuba, because they're used in Santeria ceremonies, which in Cuba isn't a bad thing anyway, but they're also used to induce abortion as a folk medicine. And they have this sort of negative thing. And very often when you speak to some of the older Cubans in Miami and you mention mame seed, they don't know anything about it. Everything stops at that point. So it's very interesting. And anybody wants to grow a mame tree, sort of. Anybody want a seed? Well, all right.
The other thing about it, we can also, there's another folk tradition.
You haven't had it? Have you had any?
Okay. If you have asthma, you will hang that around your neck, the seat, and it will heal the asthma.
Yeah, and also you won't get any dates during that time. Would you like to try a piece? Okay. What's that? No, this is actually small for a meme. Would you like a piece? You don't have to. And you can spit it out if you don't like it. It's like sweet potato pie. Oh, I'm sorry. There you go. Sure. Hold your hand out and I'll put a piece in. Take just a little taste. If you don't like it, spit it out. Won't hurt my feelings. Okay, there we go.
All right, people are asking, Chris, how long does it take from, you know, the time you plant a seed until you can get some fruit?
About 7 or 8 years, up to 15
wow.
years.
What happens if you graft it?
If you graft it, it's a lot faster. These are very difficult to graft. Did you get a piece?
I did.
There you go. Sure. Mame Sapote.
Oh, thank you.
It's native to Central America, but it's all over the Caribbean. You know, when they eat it all over tropical America, but only in Cuba. Yeah, do they really go kind of nuts over it? Makes a very good milkshake and ice cream. Would you like to try a Mame Sapote from Cuba? You can spit it out if you want. I don't care. No? How about you? Feeling brave? A little piece? You can just taste it. It's like a sweet potato pudding.
That's good.
It makes very good milkshakes and ice cream. It's just very, very difficult to graft for a lot of reasons.
I love a taste.
Oh, well, sure.
One for my friend?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So this is my part?
Nah, but I'll give you a piece. Trying to make it last. Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah. Well, we've got to be, we have to be warm.
I know.
Now, did you try the Everglades tomato?
No.
Try one of those. That's a naturalized tomato relative.
A little bit of a squash taste to it.
Yeah, sweet potato and squash to me. Yeah.
Everglades.
Yeah, oh, sure. Yeah.
What is that?
Cut it up and cook it.
Yeah, pull it. Take a tip of a knife and take all those off. Nopalitos. They're a Mexican cactus pad, and they taste like okra and asparagus mixed. And they come in bottles, and, you know, if you grow it, get a pad like that and grow it, they're just easy.
Well, That's not our regular old cactus like we got up in South Georgia.
Well, it could be if you wanted it to be.
That's what I'm thinking. Oh, yeah, it's just
huh?
A plum cactus.
No. No, 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 no. You know, I don't really know. I've always had so much of it around that, you know. Sure. Well, thank you. Thanks. If you're ever down on your way to the Keys or the Everglades, you got to go right past us. Oh, wonderful. Go to the market. And oh, no, no, no. You'll find any market you can get to. Are you going with a group or by yourself? Oh, okay. Well, then you'll have the time. Ask around. Ask where the big markets are. Sometimes it's a certain day of the week. In big cities, it's every day. And it's worth going to the big city market. And it's also worth going to the little side of the road and the little villages, because that's where a lot of weird stuff comes up. And don't be afraid to ask people about things. But you'll see a lot of what you saw here today. You'll see mango, passion fruit, cashew. But you know, that's the interesting thing about tropical fruit is mangoes have been studied for centuries. I mean, apples and grapes and peaches have been studied for centuries. These fruits have never had Western scientific study except for the last few decades. You know, so you could be an expert on one of these in a year if you paid attention to it, because no one knows about a lot of them.
You ever had cashew juice?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've had it fermented too. It's also one of the favorite homebrew fruits in Central America. You know, it seems like every bus driver has a used bottle with a corn cob in it under the seat of the bus with cashew liqueur. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, did you ever have capuaçu? Capuaçu, like a milkshake or ice cream?
Uh-uh.
Oh, that's one that's very popular in Brazil. That's only Brazil as well. But well, this is a custard apple from tropical America, and it's called Rolinia. It's in a family that's like vanilla pudding. Well, in this case, when it gets soft, you tear it apart with your fingertips and just eat it. And it's really like pudding. It's very nice. It's a tropical American fruit. This is a jackfruit, and jackfruit, this is an aborted small one. This fruit is the biggest tree fruit in the world. It weighs 70 pounds easily. No, no, no. It can weigh, it gets to be almost 4 feet long. Pardon me? Yeah, yeah. Yeah, things are weird because of the hurricane down our way, and this one's the only one I could really get. But this tastes like banana, cantaloupe, and juicy fruit gum mixed together. It's delicious. It sells wholesale for $2 a pound, which means, you know, we're looking at $20, $30, $40, $50, $60, $70 fruit. So, and I joke about this earlier in the show because I have a couple of these in my grove. I work at the park, but I have my own little farm on the side. And I have some of these trees, and I can't afford my own fruit. They line up to buy it, and you know, I'll pick a fruit, and I'll say, well, do I want the $60 or do I want the jackfruit? So I go to work and eat the jackfruit, and I sell all of mine. But anyway, this is a very compelling fruit. And this looks like a freak, but millions of people eat this every day. This is food. This is the good stuff for a lot of people. No, this is bay rum. Your grandfather's aftershave, crush and smell.
We have this here.
No, you have bay leaf.
We have bay.
Yeah, that's not the same. This is bay rum. It's related to allspice.
Bay rum. There's a perfume, a cologne for men that's made out of this.
Bay rum was the very first widely accepted aftershave in Europe, made from basically alcohol and either a leaf or a little bit of oil from the leaves.
You can't get it anywhere. Somebody I know has.
You can still buy bay rum. We sell bottles of bay rum cologne or aftershave in our little store, just because we have the trees there. You know. Oh, you could find it. It's most popular. Oh no, I don't have any. You could buy it through the mail if you call our number, and the lady there is April, and tell her I told her if she had it, she'd send you a bottle of bay rum. You can buy it right over the phone.
Yeah. This far north?
No, it will freeze. No, virtually none, except the Everglades tomatoes. Now, did you try our Everglades?
They're delicious. Now, what's the story of them?
This is a tomato relative that has naturalized here in Florida, and it sprawls all over the yard. You don't have to spray it. It grows throughout most of the summer.
Does it have our tomato blight that we get?
Oh, eventually, but more pop up. Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah, if you'd like to talk some more, I'll be over at the table over there.
Where do you get them?
It has naturalized. It just grows wild.